How will we power our future? Can we create a healthy and clean economy? Climate One at the Commonwealth Club is at the forefront of the global debate about energy, economy, and the environment. Bringing together the brightest and most provocative leaders of our time, Climate One is the place where big ideas get heard. With thoughtful and insightful discussions on policy, business, science, and culture, Climate One founder Greg Dalton gets to the heart of the matter. It's our future. It's time to come together.
Welcome to Climate One at the Commonwealth Club. I'm Greg Dalton. The nuclear disaster in Fukushima comes roughly a year after President Obama advanced a $36 billion in loan guarantees as a down payment on a renaissance of atomic power in the United States. Now, with radiation from Japan showing up around the world, there's a cloud over that revival. Will America go forward with new nuclear plants? Will it modify existing reactors? Is nuclear energy necessary to reduce the country's greenhouse gas emissions? In the next hour, we'll discuss the future of nuclear energy in America with our live audience in San Francisco and three experts. Jacques Besnenou is CEO of the American arm of Areva, a nuclear energy giant based in France. Jeff Byron is a former member of the California Energy Commission, which oversees energy planning and the building of new power plants. And Lucas Davis is an assistant professor at the Haas School of Business at the University of California, Berkeley, where he studies the economics of energy. Please welcome them to Climate One. Thank you all. Welcome for coming.
Thank you.
Jacques Besnenou, let's begin with you. Japan, how is Japan going to affect the global nuclear industry? There's about 65 plants that are at some stage of design and construction. What's going to be the global impact?
Okay. Thank you first for inviting me in San Francisco. I love to come here. Love the weather, love the people, love your energy. So to answer your question, it's difficult to say right now exactly how it's going to pan out. What I could see, and I could speak about what I know best, I think in Europe you have a different stage of reactions. France is going to move forward. You could see actually Germany, on the contrary, is pausing. Here in the U.S. it's very interesting because contrary to what we could have thought, I think the U.S. will continue. It's very interesting to see President Obama actually speaking in favor of nuclear energy. And I think the reason is very simple, is that nuclear energy is 20% of clean air energy in the U.S., 70% actually of all clean sources of energy, and it's an important part of the mix. So I think we will continue in the U.S.
And by clean, you mean low carbon?
Low carbon, of course.
Some people would question whether nuclear is clean.
No, but we can talk about that. But I'm talking about low carbon. If we are concerned about carbon, I mean, 70% of low carbon emissions emitting sources of energy.
Jeff Byron, what do you think will be the impact in the United States? Will this revival go forward? How will the U.S. reconsider its nuclear programs after Japan?
I think it's almost too early to tell. We're 1 month into this accident. Things are not stable yet. There's a lot that we're going to learn from this. I would hope we're going to see a tremendous reaction on the part of our regulators in the United States. I think the debate needs to continue. We will learn a lot from this, as we do from any accident, whether it's an aircraft that crashes or a nuclear power plant that has a disaster. This was a terrible disaster. There was probably 7 different accident events that are associated with this, unlike TMI, which only had really one accident event. We have spent fuel storage issues we're going to have to address in a significant way going forward. We've got 3 potentially different mechanisms that took place in these 3 reactors. There's a lot to learn from this, and I fully expect the Institute of Nuclear Power Operations has already begun taking action on this. The NRC can't just go...
The Nuclear Regulatory Commission?
The Nuclear Regulatory Commission just can't go ahead and be rubber stamping license renewal applications. I think we'll learn a lot from this, and I think the debate will continue. And if it doesn't, I think your well-informed audience should be quite concerned.
We can get into some of the specifics later. Lucas Davis, let's talk about the economics of this. Will this make nuclear power plants, which are already very expensive, will it change the economics of financing and building nuclear power plants?
I agree with Jeff. It's too soon to see exactly. Fukushima certainly reminded us about many of these, the inherent risks of nuclear accidents, spent fuel. But as you're alluding to, I think the big concern I have is cost. At the end of the day, even if we put accidents aside, even if we put, I think, real and legitimate concerns about waste aside, I'm just concerned that in the U.S. today, with natural gas prices where they are, I think it's hard to make an economic argument for nuclear. And it remains to be seen what the NRC is going to do. We may see that this increases the cost of building new plants in the U.S.
Sure. I would like to come back to 2 points. First, the NRC. I think the NRC will do what actually NRC does in every type of accident or any... like, for example, I was here in 9/11, and after the 9/11 terrorist attacks, actually the NRC actually mandated to review all nuclear plants in the U.S., including, I mean, the case of what we call a total loss of external power. So it's very interesting. I mean, the review was done after 9/11. Mm. And we're going to do the same now. And I think it's an opportunity actually to learn. And this is what the industry is doing, I think, best, is learning. It's learning from lessons from accidents.
But some of those, Jim Rogers, who is the CEO of what's about to become the largest utility, was here a couple of days ago, and he said the same thing. After 9/11, we looked at total power outages. Yeah. I think the difference in the lesson from Japan is some U.S. backup power is for 8 hours, and we saw in Japan that's not long enough, that we need power backup for a couple of days. Is that fair?
Yeah, it's fair to say, and we need also to be able to bring, I mean, external power very fast, and I think that's what we are going to look at in the next 90 days. Actually, well, the ability of bring outside power within a couple of days, but I think it's doable. Actually.
And more on site. Well, let's drill down into the cost question.
Wanted to say about cost, and I agree with you. I mean, it's a very expensive endeavor, but I would disagree on the fact that it's costly. The problem is not cost. The problem is financing. Because the total cost, if you look at everything, of nuclear power over 60 years is very low. The problem is financing. How are we able to finance large infrastructure?
And President Obama has $36 billion. Do you think that will get fully utilized? Is that enough? Do you want more?
I'm happy with 36, but we need financing. We need help from the government to jumpstart this type of very large infrastructure.
Let me jump in with some numbers. Yeah. There's an MIT study that was done, the landmark study that was done a couple of years ago and updated, which cited nuclear power at about 8 cents a kilowatt hour, coal at 6 cents, and gas at 6.5. Now, if you add a carbon price, it raises the price of those cheaper fuels that are, you know, putting pollution in the atmosphere. But you challenge those numbers?
Yeah, I will. I mean, I think you're talking about a very new build, actually. If you look at, for example, the current cost of nuclear power, it's way below a couple of cents per kilowatt hour.
So the 2009 study is based on $4,000 per kilowatt. The 2010 Department of Energy study comes out at $5,000 per kilowatt. I think it's tough to say. It's tough to say because we haven't built the new plant in this country for 3 decades. I agree there's a lot of uncertainty. But I think this is a giant upfront capital cost that right now investors are balking at.
No, that's why, I mean, we need the help of the government. And I was looking at the beautiful Golden Gate Bridge. Yeah. One time I think you will have to replace it. How are we going to do it? So I think the key question is how to finance large infrastructures.
But we're in a political environment where taxpayers and certainly Congress doesn't have very much of an appetite for large infrastructure projects. There's a quote here from a recent article in Time magazine where the author says, Wall Street hates nukes as much as K Street loves them. So, you know, the financiers don't particularly like them. A lot of risk, long payback. There's some political support for them. So Jacques Besnier, how do you think that we're going to get this money in this political and budget climate?
I think that's what the U.S. government is doing, and we have agreement on both sides of the aisle. It's getting loan guarantees to finance the first few plants to show that we can build on time and on budget. But if you ask the current utilities across the country about nuclear power, they love it. Nuclear power plants right now that were built 40 years ago are cash machines.
So the utilities love them, and okay. Jeff Byron, you want to jump in here?
That's the other half of this whole financial issue. It may cost a lot to build a new plant, but the ones that are existing, the 104 that exist in this country, are cash cows. A large utility, a couple of nuclear plants might generate a quarter of their profits. So the irony, of course, is they want to see these things continue to operate, and I think, as you may all know, we are extending the life of these plants, the licenses.
Yeah.
In fact, I worked on this for 5 years at the Electric Power Research Institute a number of years ago, and most of these plants are 30 years old plus. Many of the designs are 40-year-old plus designs, but they generate a great deal of revenue for the utilities, and they do want to keep them operating. And they may operate 60 to 80 years, given the current licensing environment.
I would agree. I think Jock already alluded to this is 20% of U.S. electricity generation. You have to keep these running, and I think the operators have been heroic in improving capacity factors at these plants. We've learned how to get an amazing amount of electricity out of the existing plants. But I would distinguish between these existing plants and the new builds. The costs that Greg alluded to are levelized cost estimates that reflect all lifetime costs of building the plant, operations and maintenance, fuel. And when you look at that, at those lifetime costs...
Including waste disposal?
Including yes. Waste disposal at the end, the levelized cost of nuclear with updated cost and fuel numbers is about 10 cents per kilowatt. Compared to 5 cents for
natural
gas.
But if you only
gas.
Look at
so
cost,
that's a big gap. That's
we'll,
a big gap.
We'll never build solar if you only look at cost.
Yeah.
There's no free lunch in energy.
Thank you.
Nuclear is expensive. I agree.
No, it's like, I mean, that's why I want to compare it to the Golden Gate Bridge. I mean, what is the benefit of the Golden Gate Bridge? It's going to be costly to replace it. But if we do nothing right now, if we do nothing, we are going to head up to a disaster because we are going to lose the fleet. I don't believe the fleet will be renewed to 80 years. I don't think it's possible. So at one point, the nuclear fleet in the U.S. will, as all of us, retire.
And I think that should be the goal.
Is to retire the fleet?
Absolutely. As I indicated, I've worked on this issue for a number of years, and really you want to see you want to see the economics come into the equation here as well. At some point, it becomes uneconomical to inspect every rivet and every weld on an aircraft. Every time it's in an... And so eventually we retire them. We take them out of service. Or in our case, we sell them to a third world country.
So what we need...
nuclear power plants, you cannot do so. And so we really want to retire them. In fact, we've gotten ourselves into an awkward situation in the U.S. The debate has taken us down a path, nuclear, not nuclear, and here we are. We're extending the license of every one of these existing plants well beyond their intended design life. These plants are 50-year-old designs. I wouldn't get on a 50-year-old aircraft if you paid me.
Jeff Byron's a former commissioner at the California Energy Commission. We're also discussing America's nuclear future with Lucas Davis from the University of California at Berkeley and Jacques Besnenou from Areva, a large French energy company. I'm Greg Dalton. So everyone seems to agree we should extend them, but not the life of existing plants, but not too far, right? So 60 years is okay, but not 80. So
we should think about the new generation, how we're going to replace them. This old fleet of airplanes. So that's what I'm looking at.
Jeff Byron, do you think that we have extended license of plants that should not have been extended, that maybe increase public risk to public health or safety because we're letting these things run too long?
At the Energy Commission, we conducted some hearings a couple of years ago, and it's a little bit outside our purview because the Nuclear Regulatory Commission addresses safety in this country. But California we're not going to put up with that. We have certain concerns here. Our public is much more informed. We addressed issues around earthquakes and tsunamis. We made recommendations to, we made some pretty strong recommendations that the utilities in this state need to, before they consider license renewal, they need to address our concerns about new seismic findings, about potential tsunamis. One of those utilities ignored our recommendations and proceeded. Now, we can control the purse strings to some extent. In fact, this debate is really a local debate. The Public Utilities Commission determines what the utilities can spend and on what. So this is a very hot topic right now for California, for the four plants that we have in this state on the coast. most of the plants in this country are on the coast. Do they, are they susceptible to earthquake and seismic issues, tsunami issues? It's all different. It's location-based. I'm not going to pick on any particular plant.
But you're talking about Diablo Canyon.
Diablo Canyon and San Onofre Nuclear Generating Station.
And which the renewal license, there's an application underway to extend the licenses of those. And you're
correct.
Saying that the utilities didn't take the commission's direction about addressing some seismic issues.
That's correct. And they said they will, but we do have legislators and regulators that want to see those addressed now. The NRC, I think, needs to address these issues. We're concerned about them. They can't ignore them. They went ahead and approved a license renewal application for the same design power plant as Fukushima Daiichi. One day after the accident, or 2 days after the accident, Vermont Yankee back in New York, I believe. So they need to demonstrate to the public that they're going to consider these additional accident scenarios. How do we manage the damaged core on site afterwards? These are things we really haven't worked on. And how do we make sure we can get coolant into these reactors? We're going to learn a lot from this accident.
This is music to my ear.
And the NRC needs to step up and demonstrate that they will enforce regulations that will be able to assure the safety of these plants.
So that's why, I mean, I'm advocating for the building of new reactors that are much safer. I don't know if you know, but we are marketing a new reactor that was designed. It's called an EPR.
We know.
You know? Great. And so it's been designed after by the French and the Germans, after TMI, after Chernobyl, after 9/11.
TMI being Three Mile Island.
Three Mile Island, sorry. So it takes into account all the events you're talking about, even the melting of a core. So my advocacy here is that we should be allowed to build one reactor here in the U.S. to show that we can build a new fleet on time, on budget, with predictable cost. And what could be good about this event, I mean, this is a tragic event, what happened in Japan. It's a natural disaster of epic proportion.
Yes.
But what could be good is that the public wakes up and said, we want now that you, government, try new designs in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Jacques Bezineau is CEO of the American part of Areva Inc., the large French nuclear company. Jacques, your company's building a new plant in Finland.
Yes.
It was alleged to be new modular design that would be cheaper and faster to build, but it's over budget and beyond schedule.
No, it's not modular. We didn't say that. The only thing we said about the EPR is that it's the safest plant on the planet. The issue in Finland is very simple. It's like in the U.S., in Europe, we didn't build for 20 years. In the U.S., we didn't build for 30 years. So we have lost the supply chain.
Yes.
We have lost the engineers. We have lost the labor, the welders. So we have to rebuild all of this. So it costs a lot of money. It's a great learning experience, very costly. But we are going to be done, actually. We're almost finished right now. We're going to start the plant in 2012.
And what's the cost from the initial projected cost?
It was supposed to be 3 billion euros. And we are about 2 billion euros of our budget.
So
it's about 5 billion.
Approaching double of the initial cost.
Yeah, but the initial cost was too low.
Jeff Byron, do you agree that part of this is because the world hasn't built many plants, or the supply chain has been lost, the skills have been lost?
I have gotten out of the nuclear power industry 3 times in my career. And so I'm not as current as I'm sure our speaker is here. But the cost issue is really centering upon the new construction, and I keep hearkening back to the fact that we have so many operating reactors in the world today, 440 of them, many of them very old designs. We have to address the issues around the existing power plants as well. So I know you're very interested in building new power plants, and I'm very much in favor of shutting down the older designs. So that works very well with Jacques' interest, I suspect. But whether or not the U.S., and this debate needs to play out in the United States, whether or not the United States decides to build more or not, and there's really only one or three, depending upon how you count it, that are moving forward at this point. And whether or not the U.S. is going to participate in this, and I agree, we've lost the capability. Yeah. I mean, I'm not the only person that's gotten out of the nuclear industry. There's many people in this country. We've lost the manufacturing, the design.
The engineers.
Toshiba bought Westinghouse. Yeah. I mean, these nuclear plants will be built. There are 65 of them under construction or design at this point throughout the world. And the technology will move forward, but we cannot put our heads in the sand. We need to be at the table. We need to be involved in the design, the operation, the enforcement of safety issues,
yes,
and the fuel cycle. Yes. I'm very curious about the proliferation issue we were discussing earlier.
It is worth mentioning that here in the U.S., we have some legislation in place since 2005 designed the economic argument for this. So what does the 2005 Energy Policy Act do? Provides these loan guarantees that Obama's now added to, provides insurance against regulatory delay, and provides production tax credits of up to 1.8 cents per kilowatt hour. These are designed to help us get over these learning pains, these growing pains. And I think my message to the nuclear industry would be, let's do it. Get in there and prove to us that you guys can build reactors on cost and on budget and on time.
I'm happy.
And I think that would, that would change everything if you can do it. But to be fair, the industry, for 60 years, the industry has been saying that costs are going to come down, and the empirical evidence on it is pretty mixed.
Lucas Davis is a professor of business at UC Berkeley. We're discussing clean energy at Climate One. Jacques Bézanoux, you want to
comment? I think we are all in agreement here, and we are, as Areva, ready, and we're making we have 5,000 people here in the U.S., actually. We are the largest supplier of nuclear services in the U.S., we are ready to rebuild the supply chain, actually. We had a supplier event, I think it was 3 days ago in Missouri, where we had 160 suppliers come to be certified by us, to be ready to help us here in the U.S. and help us around the world. So we are ready to make the effort because we agree that the U.S. is not only a market. The U.S. is leading the world in terms of nuclear safety, nuclear policy. So we want to be here. And we want the U.S. to continue to be the leader.
But when you really talk about nuclear in terms of building and going forward, many people would say it's China, India, the Middle East. That's where most of the plants are happening. Now, do they have the same supply chain problems of engineers, et cetera, elsewhere? Or are they soaking up all the talent?
Oh, they. I mean, China. I mean, I invite you to go to China. It's unbelievable.
Yes.
I mean, these guys are unbelievable. I mean, if we don't catch up, they're going to be number one in nuclear energy. I'm telling you.
And every other form of energy. But
well, there's some. China has some advantages, right? 60% of the cost of building a plant in the U.S. is labor, and labor costs are lower in China. And they also don't have to compete with the natural gas prices that we have in the U.S.
I know, but let me differ on this a little bit, because I went to China myself to see, because I had also the same. I thought labor is very cheap and so on and so forth. But I was very impressed. I mean, they know how to build infrastructure. I mean, actually, what they did for our plant, actually, they were able to lay down the pad, actually, in one pour. That means that they were able to save 1 month on the entire timeline because of techniques, not because of labor. These guys, I mean, have been building stuff now for the last 20 years. We forgot in Europe and here to build the bridges, to build roads, to build large infrastructure.
So can we import that talent?
I hope so. I really hope so. Why not? I mean, I'm not talking about labor. I'm talking about techniques. We need to learn from them.
Jacques Bézanoux is CEO of the U.S. arm of Areva, the large French nuclear company. I'm Greg Dalton. We're discussing nuclear energy in America, also with Jeff Byron, former commissioner of the California Energy Commission, and Lucas Davis, a professor from UC Berkeley. We touched on natural gas. Let's talk a little more about gas, because a lot of people say that natural gas is so cost competitive that nuclear can't compete at today's prices. Jacques?
Yeah, you could ask me this question this morning. If you look at today's prices, of course. But we're making investment here for the next 60 years. And we don't know exactly the price of gas for the next 60 years. I mean, I've seen prices in the last... I've been here for 17 years. I'm a new American citizen. And I've seen gas prices go up and down. So I believe that to fuel an economy, especially California. California is fuel... The economy of California is growing based on electricity. We need long-term, predictable electricity prices. So I won't put all my eggs in the gas basket today.
Lucas Davis?
I do. I love the idea. Let's definitely keep our options open. But to me, so here's the striking fact for me. 2011, the Department of Energy's Energy Outlook they doubled the amount of known shale gas reserves in the U.S., right. Doubling. So this is this horizontal drilling, hydraulic fracturing technology that's really opening up vast amounts of gas, including the Marcellus Shale, which is right where we need power, and it's the second largest gas field in the world.
Beautiful.
So it's very hard to forecast prices. I completely agree with you. But to me, the best forecast out there is the Department of Energy's forecast, and they're saying that gas prices aren't going to go above $5 until 2022. If that prediction holds true, nuclear has a real challenge.
Jeff Byron?
I like the California Energy Commission's forecast much better than DOE. One of the things that the Energy Commission does, for those of you that don't know, we make these forecasts, and we try and look out for California's energy future. 5 years ago, we were looking at permitting LNG, liquefied natural gas terminals in California. We import 88% of the natural gas we use in this state, and things weren't looking very good. And these enormous fines and the development of the technologies around natural gas, North America is looking very good now for the long term. And it's very difficult not just for nuclear to compete. And there is price volatility, no doubt about it. You know far better than I about
this. Yeah, but part of what happens is the price goes up. It did when we removed price controls in the 80s. It did again in 2006, 2007. And what happens? Price goes up. All of a sudden, a lot of people get into the gas business. They start looking around for gas. And we find more gas.
Yeah. So it looks very good. And believe me, we've permitted a lot of renewables in the state of California. We happen to think California leads the country in many regards. Sometimes you just watch what we do and do the opposite. But in this case, I think we are on the right track. And in fact, I was going to take it slightly a different direction. One of the things that's missing at the national level is some sort of coherent energy policy.
Thank you.
I think we have this in California. You may agree or disagree with it, but we go after energy efficiency first, then we go after renewables, and then we go after conventional sources of generation, which is primarily natural gas. We permitted 4,500 megawatts of solar in this state last year. That's 10% of the existing generation we have. Now, will it all get built? I don't know, because it has to compete the same way that nuclear does. And it's very expensive also. But it has other benefits. We know burning fossil fuels has health effects. In fact, that's part of the equation we're not talking about either. Nuclear does displace fossil fuels, which is not just greenhouse gases, but there are some serious issues as we continue to burn fossil fuels. So, I'm sorry, I've run the table.
To come back on gas, and again, I'm not saying gas is bad. I'm not saying nuclear is the solution, but there is no solution without nuclear energy. That means that it's like you have your 401k, okay? So you diversify your portfolio. As an energy policy, you need a diversified energy policy. Because again, if you put all your eggs in the gas basket, and you get because of fracking, you get an environmental accident down the road. What do you do? So that's what I'm saying. We need to be prudent.
Jacques Besenu is the CEO of American arm of Areva, the large French nuclear company. We're also talking about nuclear power with Jeff Byron, formerly of the California Energy Commission, and Lucas Davis from UC Berkeley. I'm Greg Dalton. Jeff, you almost got to coal. Let's talk about coal, because coal has significant health impacts. It provides most of the baseload electricity in this country, and yet if you look at accidents as well as people premature deaths, a lot more people die digging coal out of the ground and from the health consequences of coal than nuclear. So would you say we should even do less coal and more nuclear?
Yes, I've also worked in the coal-fired power industry as well. You know, there was an accident 10 days after the Japan earthquake that killed 32 miners in Pakistan, and I don't think it made the news. Mm-hmm. We don't really know how many people directly die as a result of mining coal, but it's thousands every year
especially in China, actually.
And the health effects, we know in California, studies have been done, and I speak to California because I feel more comfortable, but thousands of people have early deaths as a result of the fossil fuels that we burn. And these are not mostly power plants. These are coming from automobiles. So, yes, we know that there are health effects. There's thousands of people that are affected. We know stopping the burning of fossil fuels is a good thing for human health.
Yeah. And if you look at nuclear is very interesting because in my portfolio image, nuclear is baseload, 20%. It means it's 24/7. It doesn't compete with really with gas. It doesn't compete with renewable. It competes with coal.
Gas.
Yeah, or combined cycle gas. But it really does compete. It displaces coal.
Yes.
And because coal is also based.
But there's this week's Fortune magazine has a couple of good essays that I recommend that you look at to get some differing opinions.
And there was
a
Washington Post actually article I mentioned to you, very interesting about this.
On the health effects of coal and access. Yeah.
Well, on this issue of nuclear that we're discussing here today. About half of the electricity generated in this country comes from coal. I mean, one of the arguments that was in one of these six essays that I read last night is that, in a sense, indirectly, the environmental movement caused us to move more towards coal because for 30 years we haven't built nuclear. Well, now natural gas is on the scene, and that could change everything. The Sierra Club takes credit for having helped kill 150 new coal plants in this country in recent years. I helped write the regulations in the state of California that we call it an emission performance standard. We are limiting the amount of CO2 that you can put out for every megawatt hour to less than 1,100 pounds. That essentially, although we never said it, takes coal off the list. So coal, and we're 35% of the load in the western United States. We are dominating policy. There will be no new coal plants built in the West going forward. I don't see it.
There's very few anywhere in the country.
No.
Jacques Besnenou, do you think that if there's a price on carbon emissions, if coal has to pay the full life cycle costs, that makes nuclear more cost competitive?
Of course.
Do you want to see a price on carbon?
Of course. I mean, I think it would be great to have that all energy compete on the same playing level fields, actually. But it's true that
Except for the loan guarantees.
Yeah. Except for the $36 billion.
No, they can get loan guarantees. No, because all large investments, in my opinion, for the public good, need to get loan guarantee. But it's another debate. But to speak about externalities, okay? So I think right now, I mean, a lot of energy, including actually transportation, are dumping CO2 waste into the atmosphere.
They're getting a pass.
And for nothing, for zero.
But
this is going to have an effect on our children. So we should think about that.
So there should be a price on carbon.
We should think about a price on carbon, yeah.
Do you advocate that? Because some of your customers are utilities that don't want a price on carbon.
If you ask me the question, because, of course, they want to have a cheap means of producing energy. But I think if we want to be fair and if we want to make sure that we take care of our kids and we take care of the environmental impacts of everything we do, carbon, dumping carbon in the atmosphere as a cost. It should be borne by somebody.
Yeah. Jacques Besnenou is CEO of the U.S. arm of Areva, the large nuclear energy company. One of the ways that some states have looked at tackling the cost of this is with pre-construction, starting to charge utility customers before the plants are even built. Georgia and Florida have done that. Utility customers in Georgia now have $1.70 a month, will go up to almost $9 a month in 2017 to plan for a new nuclear plant. Do you think that that's the way to go, to have customers pay up front because investors don't want to?
It's a choice. I think it's a choice the public has to make. There is no free lunch here. Again, these are large infrastructure. The same thing if you want to really increase renewables in the state of California. I think it's great, actually. You're leading the world. But you will have to invest. It's an investment. It's a new industry. So it's the same for new nuclear. We need to invest in new nuclear energy in the U.S.
Lucas Davis, what do you think about pre-charging customers for nuclear?
Ask the ratepayers in Georgia. I think you're already seeing pushback after Fukushima in Georgia on these rates. I think this is the right way to think about it. Let's be upfront about the cost and benefits here.
Let's be honest.
If you want nuclear power, it's going
to
cost
it.
And Lucas, even the largest utilities in the country, building a power plant is an enormous cost to them. And to take on that cost, they need to have some assurance up front that they'll be compensated.
Let's take the example of the Hoover Dam. You know, I love the U.S. I came here to become an American citizen. I admire the Hoover Dam. It was an investment. We didn't ask, at that time, Wall Street to cover the Hoover. Wall Street was in shambles, actually. It didn't work anymore in 1929. We decided as a country to build the Hoover Dam. This is what it is.
But we're in a very different political era where the country is unable or unwilling.
Well, we don't have to be stupider than our grandfathers and fathers, you know. We can be smarter, you know? Sorry.
Well, no, you live in Washington, D.C., so we'll put you, turn that rat one back on you. Jeff Byron, is it okay to charge customers in advance?
You know, these decisions get made locally. They get made at the Public Utilities Commission in each state. And I think that job number one is to protect rates to customers so that they are not overcharged. Job number two is to make sure your utility doesn't go out of business. You want them to operate and fulfill their obligation to serve. One of the things we don't discuss in this kind of debate is we don't discuss the benefits of electricity. Mm-hmm. And it has an enormous benefit to human life. My answer to your question in general would be yes, but not with proper oversight. They would have to evaluate these costs and do prudency reviews.
One of the things we haven't talked about is nuclear waste. This country hasn't figured out what to do with nuclear waste. The United States canceled the Yucca Mountain project because of the Senate race in Nevada. Jacques, can we send it to France?
Yes. I have a proposal for you guys. I used to run, when I was in France, the back end of Areva, which is taking care of the of spent fuel or used fuel. We have a policy in France that we recycle used fuel, and the recycle plant is in Normandy, next to the D-Day beaches, and it's open for business. We work for the Germans, we work for the Italians, we are working right now for Holland. We worked with Japan, and we'll be very happy to take your waste.
Thank you.
With a fee.
Jeff Byron?
Well, yeah. I think this is a very crucial issue. I prefer to call it spent fuel and not waste. This is a crucial issue that we cannot ignore.
Oh, yes,
we have 104 operating reactors in this country. Those of you that are listening to this, if there's something that you wish to do, it is write your senators, tell them quit kicking the can down the road. It was in the late 70s, early 70s, that the federal government promised to address this issue. For political reasons, we've given up on the only option we have in this country, and we cannot ignore this.
No, we can't.
The world will go forward. I'm quite concerned about the countries that are emerging in this technology, who will develop reprocessing technologies, and we won't have a say or control. We need to be involved in this process.
I can't agree more. I think you have to understand that we are the only country with nuclear power with no back-end policy. We are the only one.
Back-end policy. What do we do with this?
What do we do with spent fuel?
And you know where spent
France
fuel is.
France has one. Germany has one. Finland has one.
Is backed up.
China has one.
In the spent fuel storage pools.
Yeah.
On site and in dry cast storage.
It was never supposed to be this way. Never supposed to be this way.
This problem must be addressed.
Jeff Byron's a former commissioner at the California Energy Commission, also with us today at Climate One. Our Jacques Besnanou, CEO of Areva Inc. in the United States, and Lucas Davis from UC Berkeley. I'm Greg Dalton. Will this cost more to ship our nuclear waste to France? We can't figure out the states.
We can negotiate.
Billions.
We can negotiate. No, but everything has a price, and we can negotiate. You're great negotiators. But no, it doesn't cost more. It doesn't cost more.
Less than the Germans are paying. We want less than that.
But no, it doesn't cost more. Again, I mean, it has to be included in the cost of electricity. It's about, it's between a mil per kilowatt hour and 2 mil per kilowatt hour. But it's working. And we need, again, to have a policy. We need to be able to recycle fuel. It's my opinion. And the final waste is petrified, so it's good for a million years. It's not going to leak into the atmosphere. It's not going to leak into the ground. And you have to find a final repository for it. It's very important. So as Americans, we need to decide where. And we need to open the repository and send the final waste to the repository. This is the safest solution for our children. Right now, we are using electricity, and we're leaving the waste, actually, the problem to our kids.
Jeff Byron, do you agree?
I love Jacques says we periodically and you periodically. I mean, we're somewhere between France and the U.S.
And I don't know where I live, you know. I have double citizenship.
I agree completely with what he is saying. And this industry, as I indicated earlier, these plants, the existing plants, are cash cows. I mean, they make a great deal of money. I think the American public demands that they be safe and demands that they have full confidence in their safety. If it costs more to put in new systems on the existing plants to the extent that's possible, let's do it. And the industry should absorb those costs and spend fuel, whatever it costs.
Let's pick up on that. Should the Jacques from Areva, you will Areva is a company that would happily do that retrofitting and raising standards on some of the plants. But what Jeff Byron just said is the industry should pick up the cost.
Well, consumers ultimately pick up the cost.
No, I mean the utilities, yeah. And consumers. I mean,
but shareholders, two sides of utilities. There's the shareholder side and the ratepayer
side. It
will
be reflected in the price of kilowatt hour. I mean, again, there is no free lunch. I mean, we can have it both ways. We can have a very cheap electricity and large investments. So we have to pay for it.
Lucas Davis, you study energy economics.
I guess I think spent fuel is part of it. I think it increases the cost. I think it's not negligible, but I just at the end of the day, I don't think this is the real stumbling block. I feel like if we could build a nuclear plant in this country for $2 billion, we would find a way to solve the waste problem. Tens of thousands of pages have been written about waste.
But
we've had a lot of smart people
have
studied it.
It's been a long time.
But what's frustrating actually here is that it's not the technical issues. It's not a technical issue. It's a political hot potato.
Yes.
The back end of the fuel cycle. It's not because people say it's impossible. No, it's not impossible. It's done on a regular basis in Europe.
We're going to go to audience questions soon. So if you'd like to come around this side, if you're on that side of the room, and looks like Adam is going to start the line right there, I invite you to do so one at a time and come up. We have not talked yet about nuclear proliferation and waste getting into the hands of people who wish us or our allies harm. Jacques Besenu, what should be done more about proliferation to make sure this stuff is safe?
I think the best is exactly what you said. The U.S. needs to continue to lead the world, so it needs to invest in recycling technology, in enrichment technology, you know, enriching the fuel. There's a step between the uranium in the ground and uranium in reactor called enrichment, and this is why, actually, we are investing here in America to build the next generation of enrichment plant, meaning that we need to have, we need to have the technology here so we can control it. It's very, very important for our national security.
Jacques Besenu is CEO of Areva Inc. In the United States, a large French nuclear company. We're discussing nuclear power at Climate One. Let's have our first audience question, please. Welcome.
So first of all, thanks to all of you. I think it's been a very interesting discussion. I'd like to hear Jacques take a minute or two to explain to us how the French were able to overcome the political obstacles to siting and building a waste facility storage then.
Okay. I think it's pretty simple. I was 10 years old in 73. We got the first oil crisis. I don't know if you remember. My dad was at that time a young doctor. He couldn't work anymore. Because it's not that the price at the pump was high. There was no gas at the pump for 1 month. So what happened is that we got scared, we as a French. So what we looked at, we said, okay, how can we get energy independence? It was the key, energy independence. So we looked at coal. There is no coal anymore in France. We look at gas. We have no gas, including fracking. We don't have gas. So we had no other option than to develop nuclear power. So we turned to our allies, the Americans. And actually, you need to know that the French program was built on the American program. It's the PWR technology developed in the U.S. So thank you, America. So what I would like today is to return the gift.
Take it back. Next question, please.
Could you talk a little bit about, the containment of the radiation from the spent nuclear waste, even if it can be contained for many, many, many years, there's still a danger. It's still radiation. And isn't there something else that would take care of our needs besides nuclear power in your mind?
The difficulty here is you're talking about the fear of radiation. So, I mean, we have to be protected from radiation. I mean, the nuclear waste, as we do it in France, actually, what we do, we put the final waste in, we petrify it. So that means that what you don't want with nuclear waste, you don't want it to leak into the environment. So you want to petrify it. That's what we do. And after what we do, we bury the waste, 600 meters underground. So we believe it's safe.
How long have you been doing that practice?
We're going to open the final repository in 2020, after studying actually for the last 50 years.
But
in clay.
When it does finally leak into the earth, cause earthquakes maybe?
It's a very serious question. It's a good question. We looked at it. We looked at the possibility of leaking nuclear waste from petrified waste. It doesn't leak for a million years.
But we don't really know that.
But then it will be gone. It's gone.
But we don't know
it's
that
over.
Yet,
it's
right?
over. So because the good thing about radioactivity is that it decays. So
we need to
and
get
I'll be gone as well. So anyway, so better it'll be gone.
But Jacques President, you understand if people say, well, yes, we looked at it, trust us. The nuclear industry said that before. They said that about Japan and the seawalls around the plants, which the waves but, then topped and the backup
but,
powers.
But here is the difference. I'm all of you. I invite you to come and see what we do in France. I mean,
this is not Oprah. We don't all go to France together. That's not how this works.
I'm not paying for it, but okay. You come. You have to pay for a plane ticket. But what I'm saying here is that I agree. That's why we need to be open and transparent. And I think all your questions are good questions.
Next question, please.
I'm an environmental historian who's currently working on the safety debates around nuclear power. One of the things that really has struck me is in the 1960s in the United States, the Atomic Energy Commission made the decision to allow location of nuclear plants near cities. This means that the engineered safety devices had to work perfectly. What I would like to get from the panel is, why should a rational citizen believe that engineered safety devices will always work perfectly? Because near the cities, it's impossible really to do an evacuation. Thank you.
Jeff Byron?
Actually, I worked on containment design as a young engineer for General Electric, and in fact, the Mark I containment design that's involved in Fukushima. That's why I'm quite concerned. These things are old as I am, for God's sakes. We designed based upon a deterministic approach, and this is—I don't mean to get technical here—but there was no real probabilistic evaluation of these designs. We said, okay, what's the worst thing that can happen? Well, we don't know, so let's design for a steam pipe break. So we designed the containment for a steam pipe break. You have to remember, 50 years ago, not a whole lot was known about this industry. Not a whole lot was known about how to contain and what would be the forces and loads involved. So I'm actually a structural seismic engineer by training. This was a great exercise. It wasn't until 1995 that the United States started looking at probabilistic, and we still don't have a full probabilistic approach here. This deterministic approach was very robust. There were four nuclear reactors of the same design that were closer to the epicenter of the earthquake than Fukushima Daiichi. They all shut down. Now, we're going to learn a lot about what happened at this one as a result of the tsunami that washed over this plant, and hopefully we will take this to heart in this country and every other country. But this deterministic approach is not the right way to do it. There are many accident chains that we could not and did not know how to evaluate at the time. Now, back to your question around building these by cities. I don't know if you've noticed, but the people in this country tend to like to live along the coast. That's also where you have a large heat sink where you can put your waste heat from cooling it's the Rankine cycle that needs to be addressed. Every power plant has this problem. We have 19 coastal power plants in California. Okay, so they're not located near cities for the most part. How far do you want it from a city? But they are located near the load centers, and that's the people that use the electricity. They are located near transmission lines. So there are other factors that come into play here. I think enough of it.
Thank you. Jeff Byron is a former commissioner of the California Energy Commission. Next question, please.
A very simple question regarding the nuclear waste or spent fuel. We just heard that in France they do the recycling.
Yes.
Why can't we do it here? And if not, why? And if we can do it, why don't we do it?
You want to answer?
I will say that we should be addressing this. We decided I believe it was President Ford that made this decision, and President Carter embraced it as well. The federal government would address this issue on behalf of the commercial nuclear power industry. We keep kicking this can down the road. We were going to have a monitored retrievable storage capability. We were going to then build Yucca Mountain, and as Mr. Dalton indicated, for political purposes, that's no longer on the table. We lead in so many other areas. We should lead technology in this area as well. It's a political football that no one wants to address.
Right, your senator.
We're discussing nuclear power at Climate One at the Commonwealth Club. Next audience question, please.
Yeah, the question is to Jacques.
Yes.
Jacques, I heard you saying several times, U.S. must lead the world. Everything that's happening in the world, we want U.S. to lead the world.
Mm-hmm.
Destroy the country, war, everything. What's this pressure? Why do we want to... Why not China? For example, you just mentioned that China is leading technically. You know,
because
what's that pressure?
I mean, I'm telling you, it's a personal answer here because I remove my CEO hat. As a citizen, I'm very proud to belong to the largest and best democracy in the world. And I can tell you that because I was born in France. I wandered around the world. We are blessed here. My daughter is here. She's blessed to be born in the largest and best democracy in the world. So we have it's a great reward, but it's a heavy duty. It's my personal answer to this.
And the second thing,
we have a number of people in line for
Russia. Yeah.
The questions. I think India would take claim with being the largest democracy, but we can.
It's a personal answer. I say now it's not.
Next question, please.
Hi. Lisa Weinzimmer with Platts. Hi, Jeff Byron and everyone. This is a question first for Jacques and then if others want to weigh in. Given that U.S. developers had slowed plans for new reactors before the accident in Japan, will it make it harder to get loan guarantees for new reactors approved or get additional loan guarantee money approved by Congress?
Again, it's difficult to say what Congress will do, but my first discussions with the policymakers, the senators, and the members of Congress indicate no, actually, because, again, the new reactors are safer. So it makes a lot of sense, even after, actually, especially after Fukushima, to allow for this new design to be built in the U.S., So I fully expect, the loan guarantee program to continue. But you know,
I would just add, I think the loan guarantees are going to remain in place, but we should keep in mind that that's only for the first 6 gigawatts of plants.
Yeah.
And, three nuclear plants is not going to change the story here. I think the interesting thing is going to be moving forward.
You're right, but we are licensing the EPR, a new reactor, in Maryland, okay? So and our customer is applying for loan guarantee. If we can prove that we can build on time and on budget in the next 10 years, it will take 10 years. I think it's for the U.S. financing system to decide if they want to continue.
And if you don't deliver on time, on budget in 10 years,
My fault.
You're not gonna,
I'm on record. My fault.
You're not going to blame the government for delays or that sort of thing?
No.
But at some point, you think the industry ought to say, you know what, look, it's not working because it seems like we're trying, trust us, we're learning, Okay. Next question, please.
Yeah, there's been a lot of discussion of the back end of nuclear power and the waste, but there hasn't been really any discussion of uranium mining and enrichment.
Sure.
And my understanding is that a lot of fossil fuel resources are consumed in that process, which kind of challenges nuclear's zero carbon footprint claim. And I've also heard that there's a fairly limited supply of uranium worldwide, maybe 80 years additional at current burn rates.
Can I disagree? I've done the life cycle cost, comparison of all energy sources. And you're right, in mining we consume some CO2, but when you look at the life cycle cost over the lifetime of a nuclear plant, the emissions of nuclear are way below, including mining.
You know,
Jeff Byron?
By comparison, just so you all understand, as much as we like renewables, as much as we want to move towards solar and wind, A little back of the envelope calculation showed pretty quickly that the Fukushima nuclear power plant generated a lot more electricity than all the solar in the world put together. Okay, so it displaces a great deal of CO2 emitting generation.
My favorite fact is that 1 pound of reactor grade uranium has the same energy content as 100,000 pounds of coal.
Yeah. It displaces a great deal of pollutants, criteria pollutants that affect people, and CO2, which affects our future.
And just to answer your second question, I mean, the known uranium reserves right now are 200 years. And if you factor recycling, which I promote, it's much better.
We're discussing nuclear power at Climate One at the Commonwealth Club. Next question, please.
This is regarding renewable or alternate sources. I heard that oil companies were buying up patents for solar power back into the 1930s. Are the oil companies or any energy companies trying to do more with fusion or putting money into solar to make it less expensive?
Jeff Byron?
Well, I don't know that I can speak specifically to any companies. We do see the oil companies getting involved in alternative energy, making substantial investments. I think we should all, as consumers, be a little bit leery about what their motives are. But they recognize that fossil fuels are a limited resource. So I think they're looking out for their future. We have a CEO here. Do you think they're going to buy up all the solar and put it out of business, so we have to rely upon fossil fuels forever?
I don't believe in this type of theories, actually. No, I believe they are also interested. I mean, we bought a solar company out of California last year to develop it. So I think they understand also that, they need to be a portfolio. It's really the question of we shouldn't put, again, it's the phrase, all our eggs in one basket.
Yes.
It doesn't make sense for the next 60 years. And we're talking about making investment for the next 80 years. We can't predict the future. So the best way is to invest in any type of energies.
Jacques Besendu of Areva, what percentage of your revenues in 10 years will be renewables?
It's good. It's going to grow tremendously, actually. I would say around 20%, actually.
20% renewables, and you're a big nuclear company. That's interesting.
Okay. But we believe, we believe in clean air energy. That's why we invested in renewables.
Clean air energy, that's a new one for me. Okay.
That's an enormous increase for any company to make that kind of transition.
Yeah.
It's enormous.
And we're doing it, actually.
Jacques Besendeau is CEO of Areva Inc. in the United States. Next audience question, please.
Yes, I want to first of all thank the panel for their coverage of these areas. What concerns me is the complete lack of knowledge by the general public, and maybe some of you people, about the injuries of radiation. No one worries about the natural kinds of things, whether it's flying on an airplane or going to the dentist or whatever you might be. But the opening panel talked about worldwide radiation from the Japanese catastrophe. That's so insignificant compared to the natural radiation or other radiations that we're willing to accept. I'd like to throw out a figure. I don't know how accurate it is, but it's from a well-known nuclear scientist who really knows radiation. He said the radiation or the risk involved in living next to a nuclear plant in the United States is equivalent to driving your car 3 feet a year. Now, none of us worry about, all of you probably came in cars, and you didn't worry about that risk. And I can't think of anything, you keep talking about safety, I can't think of anything that's completely safe. And I think the risk of nuclear plants is just due to the ignorance of the general public. And I don't know how to correct them.
Until they have an accident. I suspect that's why many people here are concerned about, is when the accident occurs.
But so far, the number of deaths in coal and oil, we've seen oil recently, far greater than uranium mining or nuclear power plants.
I don't know if you know that, but to confirm what you say, in the United States, since the beginning of commercial nuclear plants, there had been no death, zero, related to commercial nuclear plants.
Yeah.
In the U.S., zero.
Yeah.
Related to the nuclear side of the power plant.
Yeah.
Next audience question, please.
I know that they use nuclear warheads to take the nuclear waste and use it in power plants. I was wondering if that's something that represents a large portion of the amount of nuclear used, or could it increase?
Yeah. In the U.S., it's very interesting. Thank you for mentioning this. There is a program between the U.S. and Russia to dispose of Russian warheads.
Ah.
And you should know that 50% of the enrichment capacities right now of the U.S. is made out of dismantling Russian warheads. So that's true that when you use nuclear power right now in the U.S., you're burning warheads from Russia.
But remember, that fuel as well, those nuclear warheads that are now being used as fuel, is really not terribly radioactive. It doesn't represent any threat to health.
It's a good use of nuclear energy. If you think
better than bombs, you're saying, and it's not being mined.
Honestly, we need to think about also our grandfather. They did great things, but also they built a lot of nuclear weapons. We don't need all of them, honestly.
Jacques Bézendeau is CEO of the U.S. subsidiary of Areva Inc. We're talking about nuclear power at Climate One. Yes?
I wonder if any of you could tell me what's going to happen to the partially melted radioactive core at Three Mile Island, Chernobyl, and at Fukushima, and the radioactive water and all the radioactive machinery that are at those three disaster sites.
So I can talk about Three Mile Island because we worked on it. What happened is that we were able to retrieve the melting core, the melting fuel. We cut it in pieces, and they are now in dry storage.
They are
in a safe storage.
The fuel's been removed from
the fuel has been removed.
In dry storage, you mean sunk into cement somewhere?
In a cask.
In a big cask. A metal cask, like a tomb, but a small one. Chernobyl is a very different accident. It's from what happened actually, even in Fukushima.
So there's no real containment around the Chernobyl graphite core reactor. They essentially built the containment after the accident.
Jeff Byron, we talked earlier, we're getting toward the end here. We talked earlier about the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Is that an agency that's been captive by the industry?
I spent a lot of time across the table with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. There are individuals there that are very, I don't want to use too strong a word. They take their jobs very seriously. But this is a captive regulator, and it's a captive regulator in many parts of the world. There's some concerns about the close relationship between the large utilities and the regulator in Japan. I think we should have some similar concerns here. And it's historic. You may all recall that the Atomic Energy Commission had both the responsibility of regulating nuclear power and promoting it at the same time. So in 1976, we said, enough of that. So we created the Department of Energy and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. But there's a history there, and the public is not necessarily satisfied that wall exists. In fact, your government decided, and my government, and yours, decided a number of years ago that, you know what, let's save some money. Let's have the licensees who the NRC regulates, let's have them pay. So they, in fact, collect money from each of their licensees. So there's an enormous number of inspectors. They're on-site inspectors. They do their job very well. But we want to see a nice, clear division.
It's a very strong and tough agency. And very independent.
Never tough enough.
I agree. Never tough enough.
I want them to listen to what my citizens in California have to say about the nuclear reactors that are here. And I expect them to address the concerns that we raise in their evaluation of permits going forward.
But we need an independent agency like this. And I remember,
yes, absolutely.
I remember the oil spill last year. It was very interesting. What the oil industry has been looking at right now, the government has been looking at should they have the kind of agency that we have in nuclear industry. Actually, the nuclear industry is looked upon as a role model. It's not perfect.
We also have
but it's a role model in terms of safety right now.
Forgive me. We also have an organization called the Institute of Nuclear Power Operations.
That's great.
INPO, INPO. And there's a worldwide equivalent of this, the WANO, World Association of Nuclear
Operations.
These need to be, these are very strong organizations. They're industry run. They're self-policing, if you will. I have seen some of the confidential edicts that went out from INPO to all the operating reactors in the United States. You will do the following, X, Y, Z. And they are beginning to address these issues now, unbeknownst to the public. I think they should be more transparent about this. This is a good thing, and we need this at the world level.
And we need to end this right here. Our thanks to our audience here, Jeff Byron, former commissioner at the California Energy Commission, Jacques Besnanoux, CEO of Areva Inc. in the United States, and Lucas Davis from University of California, Berkeley, Haas School of Business. I'm Greg Dalton. Thank you all for coming to Climate One. Thank you for our attendees here in San Francisco, and thank you for listening on the radio.